are listening to the Will Power Podcast. Welcome to the show. My name is Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place, because this is the Will Power Podcast. How's it going, everyone? My name is Will Holdren. I'm the host of the Will Power Podcast. Today we have an amazing entrepreneur, and he's also based out of the Atlanta, Georgia market. And his name is Chris Stockhoff. And Chris is actually the president and founder of a company called Anchor Mortgage. And like I mentioned, that is based out of Atlanta, Georgia. They do residential homes, all that fun stuff. And it's an absolute honor to have him on here with me today. So first and foremost, Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to this conversation, kind of figuring out how you got to where you are today and, you know, everything you've accomplished with Anchor Mortgage. It's super impressive. And so starting out, I want to ask you a question I ask a lot of my guests. So take me back a little bit. How did you first get involved with entrepreneurship in your life? And what was that like for you?
Probably the same way a lot of people do. I had a job and they wanted me to move and I didn't want to move. So I jumped ship and have been self-employed since. That was in, 1993.
Gotcha.
I've been actively self-employed, spent quite a bit of time in the telecommunications space, doing market entry and regulatory consulting for competitive telecommunications carriers. We ended up selling that business in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's when I kind of jumped ship and started in the mortgage business. So I've been in the mortgage business full-time. Part-time, I started in about 1999, full-time in 2001. So.
Gotcha. I think a lot of people definitely are in your boat, especially when they started their career, right? They often get involved with the 9-to-5 corporate job and the boss tells them to do something they don't want to do. And that often creates the split in the road, right? That's what leads some of them to entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it was the split in the road for me was Atlanta versus Detroit.
Yeah.
I took Atlanta.
Better weather down here for sure.
For sure.
Talk to me, why did you want to go into telecommunications as your first business? You know, what drove you in that direction?
that was a necessity direction too. I was working for Chrysler at the time, and when they wanted me to move to Detroit and I didn't want to move, I had met somebody who was in the telecommunications space doing some mergers and acquisitions work. So I joined him and did, you know, financial analysis on telecommunications acquisitions and regulatory market entry consulting for telecommunications companies, starting in the early 90s, like I said, through the late 90s.
Gotcha.
And then we sold that business to Thomson Reuters. And Thomson Reuters, you know, took it over and still operates it today.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. And so it's also pretty impressive too for your first time really in entrepreneurship and really starting your own business. It was successful, right? The first time. And a couple years later, you found yourself kind of selling the business. So a couple questions on that note. First of all, what made you want to sell the business? If it was so successful, why weren't you continuing wanting to do that? What kind of pushed you to sell your business in that situation?
It really wasn't a decision that we set out to sell the business or that it was, you know, something that we wanted out of. It was just the right offer at the right time. You know,
gotcha.
A lot of that comes down to, you know, just receiving the right offer at the right time for, you know, that made sense. So at that time, it did make sense.
Okay. That definitely makes sense. Yeah. And next thing you know, you're jumping out of that and jumping into mortgage. So again, that's a pretty big switch up. There's not a lot of like carryovers, you know. So what made you want to go into the mortgage industry after that and kind of start out your next business in the mortgage world?
You know, I met somebody on the golf course after I had left the telecom business, and was trying to figure out kind of what I was going to do when I grew up, and he was looking for some investment capital. So I put a little bit of investment capital into it, and then started to dig in and really learn it and grow that business. And then we broke that business up into three pieces back in, gosh, it was 2007, 2008. And in 2008, I started this business, Anchor Home Mortgage, as a small brokerage. There were four of us that started the business. We grew the business to several hundred employees. And then, you know, at a peak of our success, a competitive carrier came to us, or mortgage company came to us and asked us if we would sell off some of our relationships. So we did that, and kind of wound down, you know, shrank the business back and tried to reinvent ourselves and started doing, you know, a consumer direct model where we were just, you know, advertising on the radio, TV, online, that kind of thing. So reaching directly to the consumer, where we had previously been more of a relationship driven business, you know, where we were getting referrals from realtors, builders, people like that. So, and then, you know, this time around, after we had sold off those relationships, we came back to the relationship business. So we had sold off that business. And like I said, that was probably 2013 that we agreed to sell some of our assets and kind of just starting to wind this back up again now.
That's so awesome.
In a growth mode now. We jumped back in the last 18 months or so. We've started to put some effort into growing the company again. We've did more volume so far in the first quarter of this year than we did in the entirety of 2023.
Yeah, that's amazing. And someone just, you know, looking at your story, it's pretty cool just to see someone really just excel at the businesses, no matter what it is that they're in, no matter what the industry is. And I think a lot of people listening to this podcast, you know, they want to start their own business, they want to get out there. And something I'm seeing with your story is that you always seem to find the right people at the right times, right? When you first joined telecommunication, when you first sold that business, and then when you first found this person on the golf course, right, to start up a new company. And so for a lot of people out there, they want to get around the right situation. They want to get around the right people to maybe find opportunities like this. And so in your opinion, what's the best way for someone starting out to just find themselves in the right crowds and the right environments to meet the right people?
Sure. I mean, that's a shotgun approach. It's network, network, network. Be around as many people as you can be around, do as much as you can do, and as diverse an environment as you can do it. Make friends out of people. If you're quick to make friends and you know, you're easy to get along with and you've got some good ideas, the rest of it will take care of itself.
Yeah. Network, network, network. I love that. And networking can also happen on the golf course, you know, just like you were talking about. It can happen
absolutely
in all shapes and sizes. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
And so another thing I want to bring up too is that someone might be listening to your story and seeing like all your successes and really how it's just a straight vertical climb, right? So when you peaked your success, you sold your business, you start another one, climb success again rather quickly. But we all know that's really not how entrepreneurship is, right? There's a lot of ups and downs no matter what business you're in. And so I'm just curious, like, did you have any moments like that?
Yeah, there are always hiccups along the way. There are, you know, you make decisions to do things that you know, you have to back up and rethink and restart. But, you know, the key to being an entrepreneur and being successful as an entrepreneur is not being afraid to swing the bat. You know, it's a, you know, it's to make it to the Hall of Fame, you hit 3 out of 10, right?
Right. So, that's
same, it. Same concept. It's, you know, you're not going to hit every ball out of the park. You're not going to make every business, you know, work right out of the gate. But if you're consistent and persistent and you pay attention to your business and understand your business model and what it is that you're setting out to accomplish, and make sure that you're honest about how you measure yourself and you're honest about, you know, your successes and your failures, and you're willing to evaluate yourself based on that honestly and consistently, and you set yourself some goals that you stick to, then you can be successful. I mean, anybody can do it. It's just a matter of holding yourself accountable. That's all.
Yeah. And it's honestly stepping into entrepreneurship and expecting the ups and downs, right? Not just ups. You got to be able to expect the downs and realize that at some point they're going to come, right? And I think especially in your situation, you know, one of those moments might have been when you guys split up, right? Your first company split up three different ways. So if you might want to, if you can highlight kind of that situation, what happened there and kind of, you know, what made that happen and how did you push through it?
Sure. Yeah. Three business partners. We just had some different ideas on how business should be run. And ultimately, that became insurmountable for all three of us to remain together. So we decided to go our separate ways. And no harm, no foul. It worked out for two of us, and one of us, it wasn't quite so, didn't work out so well for him. So unfortunately, it's, that's the way that it goes sometimes. That's the process. It's, you get married with the intent to stay married, but sometimes it doesn't work out, right?
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. There's, all kinds of pressures that happen during the evolution of a business, especially as you're growing. There's, growing pains. Everybody's heard that term. Growing pains are real. As you grow, you're going to have pain. You're going to, try to figure out where to spend money, where not to spend money, how to grow your business most efficiently and most effectively. And that's, a process for everybody. That's, no entrepreneur gets away unscathed out of that, for sure.
Yeah. And so after that split up happened, was that when you started Anchor directly after that, in that year?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you started up Anchor, did you have any business partners starting up that company with you, or is that just you starting up the next one?
No, that was just me.
Just me. Jessica. Okay.
Just me that time around. Yeah.
Gotcha. And then you grew that one to several hundred employees, you said, and then you started to sell up parts of that. So walk me through, how were you able to grow a company to several hundred employees? Because I think a lot of people, they might have a company, but they really struggle to grow it past a couple employees, right? Or really put the position themselves to be not necessarily working in the business, but working on the business, right? And there's definitely a difference of doing that. And I think a lot of people struggle with that growth. So if you want to touch on that a little bit of how, you've seen success
So
growing
this
and scaling.
those are really good points that most people miss. They get caught up in working in their business, in the minute to minute, day to day, putting out the fires that happen throughout the course of the day in the business, and don't spend enough time away from their business and on their business. So there's, three components of your time, right? You have to plan your time away from your business so that you can rejuvenate yourself and get yourself energized to take on the challenges of the next day, whatever that is. And then you also have to spend some time on your business, which is really the most important part. You have to think through and strategically think through and make some plans, and then stick to those plans and evaluate those plans on a realistic timeline and be, set yourself up for success by having the capital to do what it is that you're trying to do. Make sure that you're well funded enough to execute your plan. And secondarily, that you've got, a realistic timeline to execute your plan. If I were telling a brand new entrepreneur that was coming to me and saying, "Hey, I want to start ABC business," I would say, "Okay, well, build your pro forma financials on what you think that you're going to do, cut it in half and double the timeline that you think it's going to get you there. And if it still makes sense, then keep going. If it doesn't make sense at that point, then maybe you reevaluate and, readdress how you're going to approach your business from that standpoint, or your startup from that standpoint." So that's key, because entrepreneurs are always optimists. We always believe we can do more than we can do. We always believe we can do it quicker than we can do it, and in the end, sometimes it works out that way. But the reality of it is that most of the time it takes a little bit longer to get to your goal than you thought with, originally when you start out, and it takes a little bit more money to get there.
Yeah,
So.
no. That's a very good point, especially with the pro forma. And Peter Pasternak always says as well, is that it always takes more time and more money than you're going to expect, right? And that's exactly what you're talking
Of
about
course.
right
And
there.
if it didn't, if it doesn't take more time, then you weren't optimistic enough to start the business to start with.
Right.
That's the other piece of it. You have to be optimistic that you can make happen what you say you're going to make happen, and you can execute on your business plan and meet your pro forma guideline as to what it is that you expect to get out the other side with. So if you can execute on all components of that from start to finish, great, you hit your mark, or exceeded your expectations. But more often than not, people chase that a little bit, and they're more optimistic than they should be coming out of the gate. Not necessarily should be, that's probably a bad term. They're highly optimistic, and then they're let down by their lack of what they appear to see as their lack of success, when the reality of it is they should have had a longer timeline and a lower revenue goal.
Right. Well, you definitely must have been very, optimistic when you first started Anchor, because, it was 2008, first of all, when you first decided to start up the new company. That's quite a time to start a residential mortgage company, you know. So that's impressive that you made it work
Yeah.
with that starting situation, you know.
Yeah, it was by that point I already had a track record and understood how to do it. It really wasn't, I wouldn't call it a startup. It was just a restart on a business at that point where we knew I had made the mistakes. I had skinned at my knees enough that I knew how to push the business forward and grow it.
Yeah, gotcha.
And we're back to that point now. It's once you've done something, it's really easy to do it again. That's all.
Yeah.
Once you've experienced it all, you've hit all the pitfalls, you've skinned your knees, got all your bumps and bruises out of the way, and you know what to avoid going forward and how to structure your business and who you're looking for. That's key too, by the way. No,
Absolutely.
no business entrepreneur can build a business on their own. They have to have key people, and that's a huge piece of your success will always be identifying who you need. And when I say who, I don't mean the person. I mean the personality type, the energy level, the skill set, and the intelligence to be able to apply that to whatever you're asking them to do within your organization and whatever responsibilities you're willing to charge them. So.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And so I want to fast forward a little bit to where you are today, obviously with Anchor Mortgage. How many, so obviously, before you had several hundred employees, right? And then you sold part of that. So are you trying to get back to that growth spot of 100 and 100 plus employees, or what's kind of your end goal now with Anchor and how you're trying to grow it?
this time's around's a little bit different for me because organizationally we're building this around the future of the business surviving me. That I'm not going to run this business forever. I've got a few more years in front of me before I'm going to be less and less active in the business. And we've identified the key people who are going to be stepping into the roles that need to be filled. The taking on the responsibilities that I take on today in the business, and kind of weaning me out of those responsibilities. So it's going to have more to do with where those people identify, what they see as their horizon and goal set. And it's going to have to do with mine. I'm building that their skill sets so that they can decide what it is that they want to be when they grow up, so to speak, if that makes sense to you. My goals for them are certainly higher at this point, I think, than their goals are for them, or for themselves at this point. But I would anticipate, honestly, that within the next 2 years or so, we'll be back to that, 150 to 200 employee range.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I think that you brought up a really good point as well, is that you're kind of going to be phasing out, right? And so you need to find people to be able to replace you. And obviously that's a big issue, I think, for a lot of business owners, especially down the road, trying to find those key employees and really developing a sustainable plan where, they can take over, like once the owner is gone. So I'm kind of curious,
Sure.
with your current employees or the key people you have in your company, do you have anything in place as a business owner to help maintain them and help kind of motivate them to want to become an owner or go into the ownership role? Do you have any profit sharing, anything like that, CERT plans or anything along those lines?
So we don't have any formal plans like that along those lines right now, but we have a few key employees that we've begun giving equity to. In fact, Josiah Burge is our vice president. He's just stepped up in that role and taking on more and more responsibility, and he's earned himself a piece of equity in the business. So he'll continue to earn equity in the business, and I'll continue to wind my equity position down to the point where, the people who are the core people who are running the business are going to be rewarded for that. So we haven't formalized that program. It is our intent to do that before the end of this year, but we
Yeah.
haven't done that.
Yeah. Now that makes sense though. And a lot of business owners I've talked to, they obviously give out some equity, right? And just it's a really good way to just help maintain, good employees, because I think one of the things a lot of business owners struggle with is maintaining good employees and developing them, because it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. And then when they go to competitor 3 years down the road, I mean that's like a stab to the heart, right? It's
Yeah,
definitely
sure.
so you
But
gotta
the
have.
most expensive part of our business, honestly, is training people in whatever role. So, and by the way, kind of winding back. Anybody who starts a business as an entrepreneur is in a constant on the constant treadmill of trying to replace themselves. Okay, so if you're hiring people that you don't think can ever replace you, then you're hiring the wrong people. You should be hiring people who you have the confidence in and think they've got the wherewithal to take over what it is that you're doing now, because your role, even if you're going to stay in the business, is going to continue to expand. And as businesses get bigger and bigger, and you know, you grow larger and larger and get to that 100 plus employee range, then the key entrepreneurial piece of that is making sure that you're spending more time on the business than in the business. You're thinking visionarily as to where the business is going to go, what we want to accomplish, and who on your team is going to be able to help you do that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it might be scary too for the business owner to think of hiring people in that fashion, if I'm going to hire this person to replace me, right? Because that means innately they're gonna be an entrepreneur. And so you got to know they're going to want to grow on their own. They're going to, you know, do their own things as well. And so obviously that can create some splits down the road.
Sure. Yeah. You certainly have to create an environment where you reward your key people and you give them the ability to expand and grow and test their own limits, because that's what they want to do. That's what entrepreneurs want to do. Yeah. They want to test how far we can take this, you know.
Yeah.
I don't look at business and go, okay, you know, I just want to make a living here. The monetary piece of it is a measuring stick, sure. But it's not the reason that you do it. The reason that you do it is to see, you know, how solid of an organization can you build. That's the reward. That's kind of the trophy at the end, you know, is you built this thing up and somebody else came to you and said, hey, we really like what you built and we'd like to buy it from you.
Yeah. That's that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for entrepreneurs, you know, having something like
sure.
that set up.
Yeah, there should be an exit strategy. Excuse me. Got a little bit of sore throat. There should be an exit strategy for everybody. You should be thinking about that at some point, you know, along the way. Obviously, if you're young, you're obviously much younger than I am at this point in your career. You're not thinking about when you get out or how you get out or what the payday looks like when you get out, that kind of thing. That's not your focus, and it shouldn't be your focus. Your focus should be how big can I make this, you know, how successful, how big a brand can I grow here, whatever that, you know, whatever your drive is, whatever right. your motivation is, you should be focused on that, and the rest of it takes care of itself. And then just making sure, like I said, if you're hiring employees, make sure that you're spending the time to hire the employees that you think can replace you.
Yeah. No, I think you're definitely spot on. And it's so cool as well hearing that from you particular as a business owner who has done it successfully, right? And it's not an easy thing to do. And that's why a lot of people are not business owners. And if they are business owners, they find it hard to scale at the end of the day. So
for sure. I came by all this gray hair, honestly, I can tell you that.
You got some experience. Yeah.
Right.
So I want to jump into, you know, one of the really cool and innovative things that you guys are doing at Anchor. And obviously you guys are creating one of the first pad split loans. And I think that is something that I kind of want to dive into a little bit. So pad split obviously mm-hmm. is essentially being able to rent out a house by the room, right? So explain to me and to all the people listening why it's so difficult to find loans that fit that unique style of investing, and you know, how you guys are really going to be the industry leaders at the pad split loans.
Sure. Yeah. So the pad split concept is taking, you know, a single family home of, you know, three or four bedrooms, two or three bathrooms, and converting some of the common spaces into extra rooms and renting the rooms out individually, right? So conceptually, that's really easy to get your head around. From a lending standpoint, it's non-traditional. Okay. So Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the core investing community that's buying the vast majority of the mortgages that are being written out there and are writing the guidelines for what they're writing out there, they see that as as a deviation from the core guidelines that they just can't kind of chew on. So we've spent quite a bit of time here more recently developing some relationships with some private equity investors, people who want to play in, you know, the real estate marketplace to some extent from a financing standpoint, and selling them on the idea that the pad split concept drives up the income on an investment property or a single family rental property rented to one family might rent for $1,500 or $1,600 a month, let's say, three bedroom, two bath, and then it will go to, jump up to, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, depending on the number of rooms that you can split out of it, and you're renting to, obviously smaller increments. So there's less risk actually involved in renting to five different individuals than to one individual, right? So if that one individual loses their job and they're the renter of your property, then they don't have the money to pay the rent. If one of your five individuals loses their job and they can't keep up with their one fifth of the rent, you're still earning 80% of the rent and still more than you would have rented otherwise, right? So the return on investment is fantastic. The model is a great model. It's a great concept. Now it's just finding the capital to get people to want to invest in the non-traditional evaluation of the property. And the evaluation comes down to the appraised value of the property. They don't see these as, five bedroom houses. They see them as three bedroom houses, right? And they see the rental market for them as the traditional rental market, not the pad split model market. So we're starting to see we've gotten far enough into this, and we've laid out the model for this well enough that we now have an investor who's willing to start with us and start doing some, typically the pad split buyer, the investor who's buying a property to pad split, is buying it either for cash or they have a loan on it, and then they're turning around and doing some renovations to make it, rentable to more people, right? To create more opportunity for rent. And then they want to turn around and they want to refinance that property to get some of their cash back out of that property to move on to the next one, and to kind of rinse and repeat that process. And that's been the difficulty, that they're being capped out on a number of properties unless they just have really deep pockets. So we're going to roll out a product that's going to give them the ability to do a 70% cash out refinance on those properties. We're going to use the actual performance of the pad split itself from a rental standpoint, as opposed to the traditional 1007 rent schedule. We're going to have a couple of different options there as far as, how that will be looked at, depending on the investor and their, the rest of their credit worthiness and things like that. But not to get too complicated into that, we're going to have a product that's going to do something that's not out there today.
Gotcha. When do you think that that new product will come out for PadSplit and the loan?
We're going to test pilot it on the 15th.
On the 15th? Okay. So coming up very soon. Very soon.
Yeah, so we'll actually have a set of guidelines written for that, and be ready to start, writing loans for those on the 15th.
Gotcha. Now, a lot of people listening, they think real estate's obviously a great investment as it is, because it appreciates. Well, one of the most over time out of any other asset out there, and obviously it can pay for itself with rental income if you do it the right way. So talk to me, what are some of the available, I don't know if you have any unique types of loans that an investor could potentially get with you guys, and what are some of those products, and how do they kind of look and feel for a new investor that wants to get involved with the rental property, for instance?
So the most popular product right now that we're seeing is the DCSR loan, which is just a debt coverage service ratio, which means we're calculating a percentage of the, coverage of the debt. So let's use an example. We've got a $2,000 mortgage on the property, and we're gonna have $2,200 in monthly rent. So you've got 110 or a 1.10 debt coverage service ratio, right? So once you get that done and you've gotten to that point, it's obviously cash flow positive. That's the only information that we need to underwrite that loan. So we're really just looking at the property on a standalone basis to be able to support itself. And what that does for the investor is it gives them the ability to invest in much larger numbers of properties, right? So, if you're not counting on my personal income to determine whether I qualify for the next house, in my rental portfolio, you're only calculating the rent expected to be received on that property versus the expected debt service, then, you know, it stands on its own, and I can just keep running that over and over and over again forever and ever. Amen. Really. Yeah. Gotcha. We've seen a couple of people do it. And, you know, get to 20, 50, 100 houses and still keep going. So, you know, there's no natural stops to that. Whereas in traditional underwriting, there's a stop to how far your debt to income ratio can go, right? If you're calculating it based on my income,
right?
Even if I'm making millions of dollars a year, there's a limit to how much that's going to cover, you know, from a debt service standpoint. So.
Yeah, now that is very interesting, because like you're mentioning, if you do get an investment property, you have to take out a loan. Like you said, they do underwrite that based off your income in a normal situation. And if you try to get a second home, for instance, that's another $400,000, then sometimes they can even block you if the numbers make sense, just because your income doesn't match up with how much debt you currently have out, correct? So having this DSCR loan would negate that. And then as you're talking about, you can just continually build over time. So that's cool. So it's just based off the cash flow of the properties. I didn't know that was a thing, but learn something every day.
That's strictly cash flow, strictly individual property cash flow one at a time.
Gotcha. Now, is that still is that 20% down, or how's that normally work on those properties?
Yeah, typically it's 20% down, depending on the type of property that you're buying and you're trying to invest in. So, you know, when you get into multifamily and things like that, or multi-unit properties, that loan-to-value ratio tends to come down, you know, because there's more risk associated with that. But if you're buying single-family homes, 80% is the number. That's the magic number.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, well, fantastic. Well, I appreciate your time today. I know we're coming up here at the end of our half hour, but I think our people listening definitely got a lot out of it, especially, you know, your story. It's super inspiring, and, you know, how you got to where you are today, and now you're still out there crushing it, you know, so that's very cool to see.
We're trying.
Yeah.
We're working on it.
Before we hop off, is there anything else that you'd like to say? And if people want to reach out to you or Anchor Mortgage, what's the best way for them to find you guys?
www.theanchorteam.com is our website. Feel free to reach out there, or you can call our office 678-679-7000. Talk to a loan officer. We can all explain to you exactly what we do and how we do it.
Awesome. All right, guys, there you have it. Chris Stockhoff, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Willpower Podcast. If that's the case, help us spread the message of positivity and simply wanting a better life by giving us a 5-star review. Until next time, have a great week.